You're listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy. And of course, right across Tasmania for Wilson Homes. Believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, can you believe it? The Olympic Games are only 30 days away. So I wanted to talk the Olympic Games, and I wanted to talk to this man. He's the author of Olympic Turnaround and a new book called Tune In. We'll talk to him about that in a moment, but he's also a former IOC marketing executive. And given these Tokyo Olympics are going to be very different to more recent games, I wanted to have a chat and find out just what that means for major supporters and broadcasters alike. Michael Payne, thanks so much for your time on Sports Day.
Great to be with you.
Take me through your thoughts on the Tokyo Games, A, going ahead, and B, the importance of them going ahead for the International Olympic Committee in terms of revenue?
Firstly, I think the Games will definitely take place. The Japanese organizers, the government, the IOC have put in place very strict protocols to ensure that they can be a safe and secure Games, with effectively everybody having to be vaccinated before they go to Japan, being tested before they go, being tested every day on the ground, and living in a bubble of the athletes' village and the venues. So the measures that have been put in place are very tough, but I think will ensure that the Games can be staged safely and securely. And then the focus is, you know, to the athletes and making sure that they have their chance on the stage once every 4 years. And the choice after last year's postponement was either the Games take place or they're cancelled. And I think everybody throughout the sports community, even the medical professionals like the World Health Organization, they're now comfortable that the whole process can be properly managed.
We've seen Games called off because of world wars previously. We saw the challenge that was the Zika virus back in 2016 in Rio. But is this the greatest challenge the International Olympic Committee has ever faced?
But from an operational standpoint, clearly, the logistics of postponing and then having to sort of reboot everything from the venues to putting in place the medical protocols, I mean, it's operationally mind-boggling. Whether it's the greatest challenge, I mean, when I joined the IOC in the early 80s, we were actually dealing with an existential challenge as to whether the Olympics would even survive. Back then, you know, there was no funding. They were caught in the sort of political crossfire of the sort of Cold War with the boycotts. And many of the commentators at the time were sort of saying, you know, the Olympics had served the 20th century very well, but they've become too political, too big. And as a result, most people were writing their obituary. So you go back 40 years and you were seriously questioning whether it was the end of the road. Today, as challenging as the operational delivery is, you've got an incredible set of cities lined up for the future, you know, with Summer Games in Paris, in Los Angeles, and every expectation that the Olympics will be coming to Brisbane in 2032.
Do you think the Olympics will be tarnished at all in Tokyo by the fact that that international spirit won't be as radiated through the city of Tokyo as it was in Rio, London, Athens, Sydney in years previous? It just seems to me the spirit of the Olympics resonates through the host city, and that's going to be absent in Tokyo this time around. Do you think that hurts the Games going forward, or does it in a way strengthen them, the fact that, you know, this is just COVID, something that we've had to overcome?
You make a great point, and there's no question that part of the magic of the Olympic Games is this incredible celebration and festival that extends throughout the city and the local people. I wouldn't write the Japanese off just yet. They've always been skeptical in the lead up to the Games. Even you go back to 1964 Tokyo, which was a defining moment in Japanese history. Before those Games, the Japanese were very nervous. They were saying, oh, I'm not sure, it's too soon, it's too risky. Is this such a good idea? And yet it went on to be incredible Games. And the games are first and foremost defined by the incredible sporting performance. And no matter what problems you encounter in the build-up, you mentioned Zika, I mean, and people calling for the cancellation of Rio. 2 years ago for the Winter Games in Pyeongchang, people were calling for the cancellation 2 months before because they were scared that Trump and Kim were going to nuke each other. And yet they went on to deliver great winter sporting performance. So, of course, would you prefer the stadiums full with international spectators? But in order to deliver those safe and secure games, some compromises have got to be made. Will there be a long-term negative? Not at all. I think in that sense, you go back to the era of the boycotts, the Olympic movement has faced much tougher challenges relative to its image and brand.
The way we consume sport is ever-changing. Television was always the primary means. Now we're looking at it on our phones and on our iPads, still using TV, but consumption has changed dramatically. We know NBC pays billions for the rights to the Olympic Games. The Seven Network here in Australia pays millions for the rights to the Olympic Games. Have we reached a pinnacle in the value of television rights broadcast? For instance, the next time NBC signs, albeit after 2032, will the IOC still get a similar amount? And even the Seven Network, which has the rights for Beijing next year, but then 2024 is up for grabs. Do you think an Australian broadcaster will be prepared to pay the same as what they did 10 years ago?
Again, you're absolutely right. The world is changing in the way that people consume content. And in particular, sport content, that people are wanting it immediately and they're looking at across multiple screens. But the key principle is that everybody still wants to watch and engage, and advertisers want to make that connection as one of the few guaranteed content, entertainment, sport will deliver the eyeballs. So whether it's coming purely from the TV screen or from the iPhone or from screens yet to be identified, what you've got the case, NBC going out so long term, they become the gatekeeper for distributing the content. And interestingly, they announced yesterday that they will be distributing 7,000 hours of content in America. At the 1996 Atlanta Games, they distributed 200 hours. So for the viewer, for the marketeer, there's a whole explosion in new opportunity and ideas. And for the sports fan, it's great because you're able to choose what you want to watch, where you want to watch it, how you want to watch it, in what language you want to watch it. And in particular, the Olympic Games, which has more than 30 different sports, often you were not able to watch your favorite sport because the producer will have deemed that water polo was more important than judo.
I want to ask you about your book because it looks absolutely fantastic. Just before I do, you mentioned Brisbane before, Brisbane in 2032. From an IOC perspective, Rio, the appointment of Rio as a host city was seen as a risk, giving it to a South American host city. They've gone safe with Tokyo, Paris, Los Angeles. Is Brisbane a safe bet as opposed to somewhere like Jakarta, which may pose greater risk to the IOC?
I was very involved with the Rio bid and the early stages of the operational delivery. And when Rio was selected in 2009, it was seen as an inspired choice, taking the Olympic Games to a new continent. Unfortunately, after the nomination of Rio, everything went downhill. And the organizational complexity was not beyond Brazilian business, but within government and more importantly, the leaders of the Rio bid, and I say this sort of somewhat directly, but it's true, were so incompetent that the IOC didn't even know whether the games would make it to the next day. And so as a result, the IOC is out of the risk business. That recognizing that this is so complicated to deliver, not if you do proper disciplined planning, and there are still incredible memories from the success of Sydney, that the IOCs wanted to be, shall we say, just a little bit more due diligent in identifying the partners for the future. And it's not to say that, you know, the games will never go to other developing nations, but for the time being, the Rio experience is still a little bit too fresh. And it's not like you're staging a, you know, I was on the board of Formula One, you know, where you're staging 20 events a year. If for some reason one race doesn't work, it's not the end of the world. You go on to the next race and everybody's forgotten about the problem. It's a little bit harder with the Olympics if it doesn't work, because you've then got a four-year wait.
Absolutely, you do, as we've even seen with Tokyo having to be delayed by a year. I have to ask you about your new book, because your previous publication, Olympic Turnaround, was a real nuanced look at how sponsorship with the Olympic Games comes about. This new book, Tune In, T-O-O-N-In, is a more fun, enjoyable look at the Olympics, but also, I guess, in a way, poking fun at the Olympic Games. Tell me what inspired you to write this, and just where some of the cartoons have come from, because it is a remarkable collection of Olympic cartoons which really tell the story of so many games.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, yes, it does poke fun, and I think, frankly, after a year and a half lockdown, everybody needs a good laugh. And this was my lockdown project. But I used to collect Olympic cartoons, and I had maybe 50 or 100. And I always thought that it was a great way to look at the Olympics through the social time of the day, through society over the last 100 years. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to write a history of the Olympics told through the political cartoonist, maybe with a little bit of color as to what was really going on behind the scenes. So I eventually pulled together 1,200 cartoons from some 400 cartoonists around the world, 50 different nationalities, and proceeded to write a very edgy commentary as to what was really going on with many of the stories that have never been told. Some of them are very fun, you know, like, how was the Queen convinced to jump out of the helicopter with James Bond? And did the family really know nothing? I mean, the close friend of mine was sitting next to Prince William and Prince Harry. And as the Queen jumped out, they just looked up and said, "It's Granny." They had no idea that she had very quietly signed up to be a sort of participant in the opening ceremony beyond the formal protocol. You go then to other stories in the book, such as the most recent Pyeongchang Winter Olympic Games, where a group decided to crash the complete technology operations of the games during the opening ceremony, so the games will not take place the next morning or the day after. And the Koreans did an incredible job rebuilding the total technology system overnight. And then the digital detectives started, you know, finding out, well, who was behind this? And all of the evidence, all of the digital footprints over the next year led to North Korea.
Unbelievable.
Except people said, this doesn't make sense. North Korea, Kim, decided that he wanted to come to the games and it was going to be, you know, his new best friend. So who was really behind it? And a group had decided to blame North Korea, not thinking that Kim would ever decide to go and that people would look at the evidence a bit more deeply, until all the fingerprints led back to Moscow, because Moscow had been banned from the games. And if they couldn't go, then nobody else was going to go. So you've got a lot of, for the sports fan or for the historian, a lot of stories, you know, over the last 100 years, and I've been involved very closely for 40 years, so you've got a lot of firsthand stories, which I think might cause a few raised eyebrows, might cause the odd laugh. And it's certainly a very different look at Olympic history.
Michael, what I love is that the cartoons as well that have been collected, so many of them irreverent, and just even your story then, the Olympic Games are so much more than what happens within stadiums and in swimming pools, and that's personally what I love about the Olympics. They are just this incredible, all-encompassing story, this social conglomerate that comes together once every 4 years. The book is called Tune In by yourself, Michael Payne. You can jump online. OlympicCartoon.com is the website to go to. It explains more about the book, how you can order it as well. Anyone with any interest in the Olympic Games and just wanting to find out more, some of the secrets behind the scenes, it is the publication to get in 2021. Michael, wonderful to chat. Let's hope we can talk maybe a little bit closer to the Tokyo Olympics even after and get your thoughts on just how the games went. It all goes ahead, starts in 30 days. Thanks so much for your time on Sports Day.
My pleasure, and look forward to talking to you again. I will be in Tokyo.
Wonderful. Enjoy it. Michael Payne, I've got to admit, I'm a little bit jealous that he is going to be there. More of Sports Day right after this.